steel and aluminum tariffs were supposed to help U.S. Steel. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore in for David Brancaccio. Three American steelmakers are warning this week that their second quarter earnings will be down. They are blaming market conditions and falling demand for steel. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer is following this from Washington. Morning, Nancy. What's going on here with steel?
Good morning. U.S. Steel is going to idle three blast furnaces, two in the U.S., in Michigan and Indiana, one in Europe. U.S. Steel says this will cut its steel production by around 200,000 tons per month. Another company, Steel Dynamics, says second quarter earnings from its steel operations will be down. And steelmaker Nucor issued that same warning saying, quote, market dynamics are keeping many customers on the sidelines.
So what does market dynamics really mean?
Well, Nucor says there's some, quote, softening in the automotive market, that is, car manufacturers. Car sales were down this year, and so is overall U.S. manufacturing output. Earlier this week, John Deere also issued a warning about market uncertainties. It specifically cited trade restrictions and tariffs and uncertainty over the North American Free Trade Agreement. And of course, Deere makes farm equipment, which is made from steel.
How much does trade play into all of this?
Well, the steelmakers don't cite the trade war between the U.S. and China directly. U.S. Steel says shipments were lower than expected, partly because of flooding in the southern U.S. That meant fewer barges were available to ship its steel over the past few weeks. But the trade tensions have contributed to the global economic slowdown. And as you said, of course, the U.S. tariffs on imported steel and aluminum were supposed to help the U.S. steel industry.
Nancy Marshall-Genzer, thank you so much. And let's take a look at the numbers. The FTSE in London is down 0.2%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are up in the 0.1% range, with the Dow future up 24 points. The 10-year Treasury yield is at 2.09%. A year ago today, Canada puff-puff passed a bill legalizing recreational marijuana sales. Yes, I know that pun was terrible, couldn't resist. Anyway, it is the largest country to do that. The law took effect in October, and Marketplace's Ben Bradford checks in on how the legal cannabis industry is doing 8 months on.
Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau last year praised the legalization bill as a move to end marijuana's black market.
One that keeps cannabis out of the hands of our kids and keeps profits away from organized crime.
But Canada estimates in the first quarter of the year, more than half of marijuana sales remained illegal.
Price, product, and proximity. Those three P's are significant drivers to a continuing black market.
Jonathan Rubin tracks cannabis commodity prices at New Leaf Data Services. He says illegal weed is cheaper and more widely available than the regulated stuff. Still, Tom Adams at market research firm BDS Analytics expects Canada's legal marijuana industry to grow.
It's likely to develop as a robust, second biggest market in the world next to California. It's had a rocky start.
He says legalization has also had a counterintuitive effect. Legal Canadian cannabis companies are listing themselves on American stock exchanges, while federally banned U.S. businesses have started listing themselves in Canada. I'm Ben Bradford for Marketplace.
J.J. Abrams' Bad Robot Pictures, these are the people who brought you several Star Trek films, Westworld, Mission Impossible. They are reportedly close to a deal to make content for AT&T's WarnerMedia for $500 million. More and more companies are offering video streaming, AT&T, Netflix, Comcast, Sony, Amazon, Apple. And so these companies are looking for original content to stream. So the people who create shows are in very high demand, $500 million in demand.
Marketplace turns 30 this year, and to celebrate, we're going to go back to the 80s. Check out our mighty fine new thank you gifts that you can choose from when you become a Marketplace investor. Your donation, large or small, will help us keep bringing you the news and information you trust for years to come. Donate today at marketplace.org.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.
Today is Juneteenth. That is the anniversary of when, back in 1865, some enslaved African Americans finally got the news they were free, 2 years after the Emancipation Proclamation. Ever since the end of slavery, there have been calls for economic reparations. And today, that's the topic for a hearing on Capitol Hill. Marketplace's Kimberly Adams has more from Washington.
Before the conversation about who should pay for possible slavery reparations or who should receive them, there would first have to be a historical reckoning. Today, a House Judiciary Subcommittee is starting the process.
The goal of the hearing is really to talk about the legislation, H.R. 40, which establishes a commission to actually examine and look at the impact of slavery, the current vestiges of slavery.
Danielle Solomon is vice president of race and ethnicity policy at the Center for American Progress. She says the public conversation around reparations has been getting louder.
We've heard not only from opinion and thought leaders, but also folks running for president.
Nearly all the Democratic presidential candidates have weighed in.
I support reparations. I support economically designed programs with race as a conscious part of them.
I believe it's time to start the national, full-blown conversation about reparations in this country.
Do you support financial reparations?
I support that we study that. We should study it and see.
Senators Cory Booker, Elizabeth Warren, and Kamala Harris. Even with the increased attention, it's unlikely this bill will become law. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has already spoken out against it. Nevertheless,
the conversation is further along than it has ever been in my lifetime.
William Darity is an economist at Duke University. He says it's encouraging that much of the recent conversation has focused on the racial wealth gap.
The average white household in the United States has a net worth of about $800,000 more than the net worth of an average black household.
Darity argues any plan to address the lasting economic consequences of slavery and discrimination should at least start with the wealth gap when it comes to calculating the bill. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
From APM, American Public Media.
Hey, everyone, it's Rima Jerez, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.